Hey, Tiger fans, you know what's more frustrating than a bases-loaded double play? When your small business is striking out with technology problems. That's why our good buddy Brett Danis created Summit Tech Partners. Brett's a Michigan guy through and through and a lifelong Tigers fan. And Summit provides the perfect relief pitcher for your IT needs. While other services throw you generic fastballs, Brett's team will scout your business and develop a customized game plan specifically for your small business.
While you're keeping track of ERA and RBIs, Brett's team will handle your IT infrastructure. His team will monitor your systems like a hawk-eyed umpire, catching problems before they become major league disasters. Summit has a full roster of IT services that'll keep your business safe and running smoothly, so you can spend less time troubleshooting and more time watching torque bombs.
Visit homerun.support today for your free consultation.
Summit Tech Partners, where your small business is always the MVP.
Welcome to another episode of The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast with your hosts, Bill Patterson and Chet West.
Fans, it's Billy P from the D and Chet West, your hosts of The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers and soon-to-be Detroit Lions podcast. We are going to recap a excellent weekend series between your Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. Game one, Friday night, the Tigers won 7-5. And then yesterday, Saturday, was a frustrating 1-0 loss. And then I guess maybe as retribution, Royals fans are probably as disappointed because today was a 1-0 win for the Tigers. So the Tigers take yet again another series from a division rival, and they look good doing it. Chet, I'm going to wait eagerly for my Tank 7 Boulevard Brewing that you're going to send me for getting yet another series win correctly predicted.
I said I was not doing it this time. There was no way I was biting down on that.
Come on now. Take some of your steamed weenie money and
steamed weenie money
as it incubates in your cargo short pockets. So let me go to game one. My guy and also loyal listener, Adam Palmer's guy, Dylan Dingler, had three hits, including a home run and three RBIs. He was basically the offensive story. The Tigers did win 7-5. It was their fifth straight victory. Very, very, very impressive all the way around. Riley Green had himself a game. So did Torque. They each homered and they each drove in two runs for the Tigers. And I think what's more important is when we look at this on the macro level, not the micro level, I just mentioned five wins in a row, but this is also the 20th win in 28 games. And it did improve the Tigers to a major league best 38-20. That being said, Brant Herder came out of the pen for his second win on the year with no losses. He was our winning pitcher and a guy who, boy, I'm really, really, really starting to, it's not that I was ever not behind him, but I'm starting, I think I might have a bromance developing with Will Vest. I mean, he is something else. And
he gave up a run, but
he got his eighth save, and that's what I'm going to say. So if you want to give some of your feedback, mine is nothing but positives for this game. It was exciting. It was back and forth. It's exactly what you want in a division rivalry. Kauffman Stadium looked fantastic. The fountains were going. The place looked full. The weather seemed to be pretty much perfect. 75 degrees, sunny, a little bit of wind, but overall, really coming around to the fact that the American League Central, after our last pod's recap, is, I would say, kind of where baseball's really the most exciting this year for this season, 2025.
Yeah. Great competition in this division.
So go ahead and give me your thoughts, please.
Yeah. So I look at the Royals as a formidable opponent this year. As a matter of fact, they mirror some of ours. We mirror each other fairly well. They've got some good young pitching, as do we. They've got some veteran guys that are out there throwing the ball pretty well. We have a little bit, maybe a little more youth. You're looking at like Mikel Garcia and guys like Salvador Perez and Mark Canna still being major options in their side of the lineup. We don't quite have that veteran presence to that degree. Maybe Gleyber Torres is about as close as we get. Game one, Dylan Dingler, Wencel Perez, and I'm going to talk a little more about Dylan Dingler and his ascendancy here as catcher du jour for the Detroit Tigers. But Wenzel Perez had a great game. He went 3-for-4. That was really good to see. He got the home run the other night in his first game back and then struck out a few times. Came right back in the series, started the series, goes 3-for-4, gets a double, throws a double in there, scores a couple runs. Torque had a decent game, went 2-for-5. And Dylan Dingler, 3-for-3 with a home run and 3 RBIs. And that kind of the difference maker there in that game, really. Other than that, this game represented all of the offense for the series. The other two games, not so much. What are your thoughts?
Both teams are built similarly from a pitching standpoint. Tigers have done more from a veteran bullpen standpoint. Outside of that, you nailed it with Michael Garcia, Alvi, who is going to be in the Royals, you know, Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame, whatnot. He's awesome. I mean, he's just someone that
still chugging along too.
You just have to admire. You know, I don't think he gets, you know, from first to third very well anymore.
Worst season. Yeah, we could be seeing the sayonara so long for him because he's having his worst season right now. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe.
But a tip of the cap to him. He's been a thorn in the Tiger's side against, you know, also the rest of the American League. And he's just someone that, like, I respect, you know. It's the same thing with Bobby Witt Jr. I respect him. Same thing with Miguel Garcia. I respect how this team's been constructed. Uh-huh. And again, I just love this division. Yeah. It is really, it's fun.
Easy division to cheer for at this point. I mean, these teams aren't built on superstars. They're not built, you know.
No, it's good young players.
They're scrapping.
Yeah. And, you know, a guy like Jr., I mean, we knew his dad, you know, as a player as well, you know, most of us of a certain age in terms of Bobby Witt. And, you know, it's so cool to see him not only be great, you know, his dad was really good as well, but like he's an exciting player.
He is a complete baseball player.
A 5-tool player for a small market team. This is just, it's exactly what the game needs. And personally, selfishly speaking, I wish we had him as a Tigers fan. Oh. However, I'm going to enjoy playing against him for the next 15 years. And, you know, if fortune smiles on us, maybe you and I will make it to Cooperstown someday to witness an induction ceremony.
Moving You're going to Bobby Witt Jr.'s induction ceremony.
You no, got this I said the... I said an induction ceremony.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Gotcha. Gotcha.
No, I'm not. I don't have that much of a love affair for him. I don't have that much in my heart between my wife and then,
I understand.
You know, Will Vest. There's only so much left.
All your love is for Will Vest right now.
And Dylan Dingler. I mean, how much more do you want me to give?
All right. So 7-5 game, they pull it out. A little bit of a back and forth in the late innings, but they ended up with the W. Good way to start the series off. How about game 2? A little Scooble game.
Boy.
Unfortunately, it was also a Michael Wacha game.
I'm not going to do my Wacha times 3 because it's stale, it's old, and as much as I love
it. You did it, and it was like Beetlejuice, and he showed up and crushed us. So.
I know. Great reference. As much as we both love the Muppets, we need to stop it.
Yeah.
Fozzie's awesome. Michael Wacha is a Tigers killer. At least he was yesterday.
Here's something I found about this game that was incredible. Uh-huh. So Scooble is striking guys out with the changeup. Uh-huh. Okay. Wacha was like a carbon copy from the right side, striking guys out with the changeup. It was like watching a battle of changeups the whole game. I couldn't believe it. And both these guys, their fastballs, I mean, Scooble is dotting that upper in corner to the right-handed hitters. And Wacha was coming back and just pounding the inside part of the plate for the lefties. These guys had a plan, executed it to a T, and both of them went head to head. I mean, I don't think we thought we were going to get this type of a matchup. We thought this was saved for when it was Scooble Bubic, but it ended up being Scooble Wacha, and it ended up being great.
That being said, I
put boring from an offensive side of the ball.
It was really boring. It will, truth be told, I went with loyal listener Matt Voss to the Cubs Reds game, which was absolutely fantastic. 2-0 Cubs win. This is not a Cubs podcast, so let me get back to it. Before game, we did go to DraftKings Sportsbook and placed money on both the Champions League final, which did well for us.
Applaud.
PSG. And cheers for PSG.
Yeah.
+110. Boy, I would really be freaking out if I were an Italian soccer fan right now, but that's a different pod for a different day. That being said, I did lay 10 units on a Scooble start, which is my usual wager.
Okay. All right.
And that money did not come back to Billy P from the D. That being said,
what is one of your units?
So that'd be $100 bet.
$100. Okay, $100 bet. So a unit for you is $10.
Is that fair? I don't know. What do most people do for units?
I thought they were typically $20 to $25 was a unit, but I think it could be different for anyone. I don't know. Gambling's still illegal in Minnesota, unfortunately. So, we don't have that here yet. It'll be, I don't know, a decade or two by the time we catch up.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Hopefully by the time, you'll probably be in California, Arizona, or Florida by the time they make
that,
it legal.
That could be true.
You and I will be in the villages.
Gambling away my retirement fund. Sure.
Oh, I mean, that's what Social Security's for, right?
Honey, don't listen to the pod this week.
Okay. This, from what I did see, and I did watch a recap, and we watched some of it later. D'Agostino's pizza post game, and I have to say this was as boring of a game as I've seen.
Yeah.
Despite it being an outstanding pitcher's duel, I think I have become spoiled. I'm going to ask you the same question, that when Scooble pitches that well, I'm expecting a W, and I was so frustrated with every at bat. And here's what I'm going to do before I let you go into your next, rant, diatribe.
Yeah.
Okay, Carpenter, 0 for 4. Torres, 0 for 3. He did walk once. Keith did get two hits, so he was 2
for
4.
Broke up a no-no in the 7th.
Yes. Riley Green, 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Torque, 0 for 3 with 2 strikeouts. Perez, 0 for 3, 2 strikeouts. Dingler, 0 for 2 with a walk. Sweeney, 0 for 2, 2 strikeouts. Or excuse me, 0 for 3, 2 strikeouts. Baez, 0 for 3, 1 strikeout. It was putrid and I know Waka pitched well, but nobody saw the ball well whatsoever outside of Colt Keith. And Torres, getting the one walk, Dingler getting his walk. It was bad. I mean, they looked lost up there.
And they pulled Scooble after 7, so you get Brisky in the 8th.
And
He got hit.
Bad bro.
Gave up a run, and it's Vinny Pasquantino took the game one blame on his shoulders and said he wasn't hitting well with runners in scoring position. And Smerly comes back in the second game and dices one into left field and scores Lofton.
So,
and
can that was I it. Really That's quick? I'm your first baseman from the Royals.
Yeah.
If any current Royal were to open a restaurant, specifically an Italian restaurant,
Vinny Paz.
Oh my God, I would go there opening night. His name just reeks and speaks amazing food, amazing service. You could smell the garlic.
Vinny Paz's place on the river. Let's cut the commercial right now. We don't even need it to be real.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to talk about on game two?
No, I actually hated the fact that Scooble lost the win. I hated the fact that we couldn't get any offense going. I mean, Major League Baseball has accelerated offense for a reason. This game was, I love a good pitcher's duel, don't get me wrong, but I like to see a little offense too. I like to see some base runners. That didn't happen in this game, but kudos to the pitchers. They both went at it. They did great.
Well, I think the other thing that we've seen though is since last Sunday against the Guardians and then the 3 games against the Giants and now 3 games against the Royals, heck, you can even go back to last Saturday. We've only really seen offense in three games.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that have boarded the struggle bus too at the plate over the last series and a half, 2 series here.
Yeah, I'm not feeling good about it, and I still would really, really like to get another bat.
Javier is starting to trend back towards his alter ego, Javi.
And Torque is also becoming normal. Torque
has been a little less than the desirable. He's no longer the Torquenado, he's just Torkelson now.
And so, our guy Z-Mac is reverting back to
the Z-Mac that we all know and love, which is a utility guy.
He gave us 6 great weeks.
He did. He did. All those guys gave us a great 2-month stretch. Hats off. But they're gonna have their own divots here, okay?
The question is, can they get out of it?
Is it a divot or a slump? What is it?
Yeah. Well, and then if I can, the national media is now talking about this, Bob Nightingale, Passan. Yep. Not only are the Tigers announcers talking about it, Riley Green is either on or he is off. He is Jekyll and Hyde at this point.
Yeah.
And again, this goes back to my point on why I personally think we absolutely positively need another Gleyber Torres in this lineup is what I mean. It's just that caliber of at-bat, a professional at-bat, who knows when to take a walk.
Riley may get there. He may get there. He just seems to swing at some pitches he shouldn't sometimes. It gets a little,
I'm going to have to disagree with you on this. Our sample size is large enough at this point that the hot streaks are great.
Okay.
The cold streaks are, we need another at like really, really good professional batter. That being said, the Tigers did pull out a 1-0 win today. It was the exact opposite of what happened yesterday. They had 5 hits. The Royals had 9 hits and they ended up winning 1-0 because Z-Mac, who I just kind of dragged through the mud, did have an outstanding triple, barely beat the tag. God bless Joey Cora as our third base coach. I mean, he just lets these guys run the bases.
Lets them run.
And yeah. Z-Mac ran from first to third very, very fast. Not as fast as Bobby Witt Jr. does because he's the fastest player in baseball, but dang, he was fast. Yeah. And that was the difference in today's game. Going through the lineup, Justin Henry Molloy had a key walk. I still think he's going to be a difficult decision whether you keep him up or send him down because every time I want to say, hey, he needs a little more seasoning at AAA.
Then he comes back and does something at the plate.
Yeah, it's like Dumb and Dumber. Every time I think you do something, just...
I like his approach. I just don't know. Like, his ball strikes approach and the way he's looking for pitches, I like that. It hasn't translated into the hits.
Yes. I do like the platoon, though, if he and Perez kind of platooning in right field on a matchup basis. So that I can get behind and totally used to. Kudos to AJ Hinch and the Tigers coaching staff for that. Torres, he always gets a walk. Like, he's now walked in 9 straight games, and he is going to be the free agent signing of the year. The question is, do the Tigers extend that, and how much does he want? I don't know who his agent is, and I'm not asking you. This is for next week's pod. Mm-hmm. If he's a Boris guy, forget about it. If he's anybody other than Scott Boris, maybe we have a chance. But I've been really pleased with it. I know we talked last pod that he's on the wrong side of 30.
Sure.
We might be getting the best. And I can go either way on this. I'm not saying, 2 more years would be the most I'd give him. And I'd overpay on those 2 years. But that being said, I'm very pleased with him this year. I think you are as well. Green had a great day today. Again, is it good Riley?
2 for 4. Who are we getting? Good Riley, bad Riley? We don't know. I mean,
we got Dr. No, yeah. I think we got Jekyll today. I don't know. Yeah, who's good? Who's bad? I don't know. And then this one was absolutely puzzling. Ibanez got the start at third. I don't mind him at third. What I do mind is that he's only in there to do one thing, and that is hit left-handed pitching.
Yep.
He didn't hit left-handed pitching, and he hasn't been hitting left-handed pitching basically for the last week. If you can't hit left-handed pitcher Andy Ibanez, as much as I already said, my heart's full. I've given so much love and bouquets around. Mm-hmm. You're kind of dead to me, Andy Ibanez. Yeah. I'm really sorry. You got to do this. Torque batted DH today. I don't terribly love him as a DH.
Yeah, I'd like him at first.
Yeah, he's really good. And
I know
really
you
got
to figure out where to put Colt, where to put Torres, where to put everybody if you do that. But I hate that he's coming around defensively at first base.
Great.
I think it helps his bat out when he plays first base.
Yeah, I think he's more engaged.
He got the walk. He got a walk today. I mean, he got on base once, but yeah, he needs, well, I don't know.
This is not a hot take, but it's, let's call it lukewarm. I would trade Colt Keith if there was any trade value to get that more veteran at bat. Yeah, that is my take. Javi Baez in center field got a hit. He was 1 for 4. Guess what happened the other 3 times?
Yeah, he's the zero-sum game here. It's like he gets 3 Ks and a hit. You know how many Ks he's hit? I think it's his last 12 plate appearances have been absolutely ugly. And I will drill into that a little bit if you want to keep talking away here. His underlying metrics right now are absolutely awful.
Yes.
And across the board, his bat speed's about the only thing sitting up. But if you look at his Baseball Savant page, it is blue from top to bottom at this point.
Yes.
Which is just bizarre based on what he's been doing up until the last week and a half now.
So can I give you 2 more thoughts, 3 more thoughts, and then I will let you roll off this? Ooh, the mustache was behind the plate today. I'm teeing this up for you. He went 0 for 3. He's batting 125 with a 410 OPS. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't start hitting in, I would say, the White Sox series, if not the White Sox and Cubs series, which are the next 2 series.
Problematic right now.
I'm sorry. He's another guy that I could just say, Jake, it was great knowing you. Love you, 34. You're great at framing pitches for our guy Scoops, but you're not. I mean, he is not pulling his weight whatsoever. He looks lost up there.
He does.
And he was never, he's always been like a 212, 215 type hitter. So he's not, you know, what we're asking is not for him to be, you know, batting 280. We're asking for him to bat 215, and he is a third of the way there. And then Z-Mac, he was 1-for-3 today, run and a hit. He won the game. He struck out once. I cannot come down too hard on him. Thus far, I would say he is probably the MVP of this season. In terms of just being the glue guy, he filled in when he needed to. It's short. He's filled in. Well, actually, he's played all four infield positions. He's also played all three outfield positions. And the fact that he's batting 267 with a 778 OPS is, this is as good as it's going to ever be. And I happen to just really, really, really feel strongly about him. And he is, I guess we are officially June 1st. So we can say 2 months in, he is my offensive MVP. Okay. Obviously, I would give Scooble the MVP for the starting pitching. And then Will Vest would be my bullpen guy, you know, 2 months. So if we do this, you know, August 1st, we could do something similar. And then, but you get my point. I just think those are the guys that, you know, if anything was deserved, but, you know, not that we're giving awards this soon, but I just think those are three difference makers, period, on the squad thus far. I know you've got some topics for us, so if there's anything you'd like to add to Game 3, I can't wait to hear your catcher metrics. And then once you're done, we'll talk a little Kansas City barbecue, and then we'll preview what's upcoming for our Tigers. CXG believes in the visual art of storytelling, whether it's through film, video, live events, or podcasts just like this one. Our mission is to connect audiences through powerful, authentic stories that leave a lasting impact. CXG is proud to support the Litter Box because great stories deserve to be seen and heard. Learn more at cxgfilms.com.
Yeah, I don't, and as far as today's game goes, I had to sit out the first 7 to 8 innings of this one. My daughter's team won the Minnesota Cup for soccer today.
Congratulations. That's outstanding.
Outstanding finish for them. They held on in a very tight 1-0 game at the end there. So I did not get to watch today's game. I got home in time to watch the 9th inning. And here's the thing. We had yet another 1-0 ball game. This one sounded like it was a little more exciting than yesterday's. Base runners all over the place, from what I can tell, for the Royals. They just couldn't play to run. I mean, I looked about halfway through the game, and I saw Keiter Montero made it into the fifth, gave up 7 hits, didn't give up a run. Only 2 Ks. I was like, wow, there's a lot of base runners. 1 walk. So the Royals seem to be snake bit with guys on base. They don't seem to be able to move those guys very easily. Yes.
They are 30 out of 30 teams in MLB in home runs.
That makes sense.
In home runs hit.
Yeah.
So the fact is, they get them on. They have nobody with.
Yeah.
And Bobby Witt is many great things. Junior, excuse me. He is not necessarily a power hitter. He's a guy to get on base.
He gets his home runs, but they aren't aren't the big tool, right?
Well, where he bats in the lineup too, there's never really anybody on base for him to knock in. Sorry, I interjected. Please continue.
No, you had a point to make, and it was a good point. I just don't think they score, you know, and Vinny Paz, our restaurateur, in game one, took the blame for not getting the guys across the plate when he needed to. They did put up 5 runs. That might have been a little more of our pitching doing something for him there than their hitting. In game two, they obviously didn't plate many. They got 1 run across, and they didn't have a ton of base runners, so that's Scooble effect there. Game three, it looks like they had a ton of base runners. The carousel was moving, and they just couldn't get anybody in. 9 hits and nothing to show for it. So maybe Kansas City still got some work to do before they become a competitor in our very competitive division. Now, I'm going to move off of game three because, like I said, didn't watch a whole lot of it there. But I wanted to bring up a couple things. First thing I wanted to bring up was Baez and this divot, which I'm going to start officially calling a slump soon.
I think it's more than a divot. It's one of those roadside water basins.
He's starting to go back to some bad fundamentals here that he tends to drift into. He hasn't had a hit since the Cleveland series prior to today's game. So today was his first hit in the last six games. In the Cleveland series, he notched two hits in the first game and then sprinkled another two over the next three games. So he has five hits in his last 20 at-bats, but three of them came in those first two Cleveland games, and since then he hasn't done anything. Unfortunately, in those 20 at-bats, he has 11 strikeouts. So sorry, I had to add today's three strikeouts to the total. So he can't strike out half the time and be an effective hitter. That's not going to get you very far. I think he's starting to get back into that swinging at everything, and he's not being as selective with his pitches. They talked about yesterday with Torkelson as to try to identify that one pitch that you want to hit, that one pitch you're looking for, because it helps you identify all the other pitches. So you know what that one you're looking for looks like, and then you can start picking apart the rest of the pitches that come in and say, oh, that's the slider. I don't want that. That's the curve. I don't want that. Bam, there's a fastball. I'm going to, you know, reach out and swat it. So at least that's called a hitting approach. Baez, I don't know if he's doing that anymore. He seems to be just swinging at everything. And I'm wondering if these pitchers kind of figured out, hey, we don't really have to throw this guy strikes. Why are we all of a sudden throwing this guy strikes? So we'll see. We'll see if he makes the adjustment and goes back the other way. Or we'll see if he keeps trending down this road and we got 2 months out of him and we're happy. Your guy, everybody's guy, Dylan Dingler. Everybody loves Dylan Dingler. We had an argument this past. Who claimed him as their player for this year? I thought earlier on you said it was our super fan Adam Palmer, but maybe it was not.
I was first.
You were first. Okay.
I picked him in late February, early March as my pick to click.
It's like an adoption fight at this point. Who's going to adopt Dingler? So I wanted to look back and check at some of, you know, we haven't had a great catcher that Detroit has brought up from the farm system. You know, a homegrown catcher in quite a while.
Mickey Templeton would have been your last, and I don't know that he was great.
Mickey wasn't a Detroit. He was an A's catcher first.
Oh, that's though. Right. You're right. So we Lance Parrish would have been the
so
worst.
He's not a homegrown guy. Yeah. So I went in and took a look at, I compared the stats in the first. So Dylan Dingler, this is very unfair to Dingler right now because he hasn't had nearly as many at-bats as these two guys have. But two seasons in to their career, I did Parrish, Freehand, and Dingler. Here's the most surprising stat. Dingler's war is not far off of what Parrish and Freehand were after two seasons. I want to check this thing at the end of this season and see where Dingler ranks, because he might surpass both these guys. He's played 70 games. Parrish had 97, Freehand 104 through two seasons. He still has 30-some games left easily this season to catch up to those two guys in the games played. So again, statistically, he has not had the opportunities. He has a 1.2 WAR in his 2 years. Lance Parrish was a 1.6, and Freehand was a 1.5. 2 years into their career.
Yeah, but his WAR at this current rate will exceed that by the
way past it. He's going to blow past these guys.
Yeah, Chad, this is great research. Great research, and you're helping my cause.
Hits, okay, for a catcher, hits. Let's talk about this. Two seasons, not even quite two seasons, obviously, for Dingler. Lance Parrish had 72 hits in his first two seasons. Bill Freehand, 77. Dingler, 61. And he's got the whole rest of this season, two-thirds of this season to go to catch up to those guys. Home runs, Parrish had 17 in his first two. 9 for Freehand. Dingler is at 6 already. What do you want to bet Dingler's got 11 more home runs in that bat this season? You think he can get 11 more in Ty Parrish?
He will definitely get 10. So
you think 10? Okay.
Well, no, I'm saying he...
Is that where you're setting the over-under?
I'll do your 11. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's my guy. I mean, why would
point
I doubt him?
Being,
so what do you want me to send you since I'm still awaiting my beer package?
Point being, I know, we don't worry. Well, this is a running tab. It's a running tab. Point being, his slug is better than Freehand's, not quite Parrish. He's still got this whole season to go. We'll see how he goes. But trend-wise, he is really starting to look like he could be better than both of those guys after two seasons. We'll see. We'll see. I'd like, you know, we'll come revisit this in a couple of years and see where they stand after, you know, Freehand had a great career with the Tigers, obviously, as did Parrish. So we'll see what happens here with Dingler. But wanted to kind of just, you know, get the juices flowing on Dingler a little bit and start to put him into some rare Tiger air there.
You don't need to get me excited. I
did it again, though. I did it again for Riley Green. Al Kaline, Kirk Gibson, Riley Green. First 4 years of their career. You want to know, here's how dominant Kaline was. In his first 4 years, He had a 15.7 WAR. Kirk Gibson only had a 4.
Kirk Gibson wasn't that great of a player. Do you know who had
Isn't that incredible to think about?
He had two huge
home runs in his career that I think made him who he, you know, what people remember him as.
I think he was a better football player at Michigan State than he ever was a Major League Baseball player.
Okay.
Do you know that he had the most errors of any outfielder?
Not
of the Tigers in 1984.
My dad used to scream at him.
Outfielder in the American League in 1984. He had the most errors.
I believe I was about a seven or eight year old. Watching a game with my dad on a Saturday on Channel 4. I mean, you remember this, K-Line and Kel doing these games.
Legendary.
And I'll never forget, Gibson played a ball, went for like a one-handed catch, and it bounced out of his mitt. And my dad stands up in the middle of the field. He goes, quit playing like a kindergartner in the outfield. And I don't think he erupted at anybody but Kirk Gibson in my childhood. That was the one time I saw him look at somebody, not on a football field, like a baseball player, and actually go nuts on him for making a bad play. And he plays a terrible outfield. I'm telling you, he attracts with what you're saying. I don't remember him being that bad, but that one comment sticks out to me. I'm like, maybe he was an awful outfielder. I don't know. At any rate, the only category that Gibson beat K-Line in their first 4 years is stolen bases. So his speed was his calling card. Otherwise, Riley Green has a much higher WAR. He's a 9.9 WAR. K-Line had a 15.7 after 4 seasons. So we'll see. I mean, Riley Green's 53 home runs, K-Line 59. Gibson was way back with 27. 75 RBIs for K-Line, 193 for Green. I mean, maybe we short sell Green a little bit here. Green did have the lowest average, though, interestingly enough, of the three. Kirk's average was 291. I imagine he beat out a lot of grounders to first. K-Line's is 311 after 4 years, and Riley Green is 267. So he's got a little ways to go to catch up there.
Make a couple just great research on your part, and I appreciate everything you're saying. If Al K-Line is a comp that could be Riley Green's ceiling, I'll take that all day long.
I'll take it all day, right?
Meaning, even if he's 80% of the player that Al K-Line was, that is outstanding.
The effort was to find homegrown outfielders that were stars and homegrown catchers that were stars, not just, you know, as a Tiger, but in the league overall.
Yeah.
And I struggled a little. I'm sure their outfield, we could find a few more, right? But catcher, I couldn't. I was like, wow, how many catchers can we go back like 50 years? But at any rate, you know, Kirk didn't have a single all-star in his first 4 years. Riley's already had one. If Riley Green settles somewhere between Kirk Gibson and Al K-Line, I'm not going to be too disappointed as far as being a quality player. So he keeps going. We'll see what he gets. See if he ever catches up to that elite level. But K-Line was one of the best of, you know, best all time.
He doesn't have to catch Al K-Line.
No, he doesn't.
And he clearly is better than Kirk Gibson already. And if he can, again, get to 80% is probably too high. 65% of Al K-Line, 70%. I'll take all day long.
I wanted to pull Chet Lemon in, but he's not homegrown.
No, so but
he didn't qualify.
Name a White Sox player that is homegrown that they've ever held on to. They let everybody go. Very I think Mark Burley's the only one. Anyhow.
So do your food. I want all your food. Do the food.
Oh,
do
food.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Give us the food.
Okay, sorry.
What am I eating when I go to a Royals game, Bill?
Well, this has nothing to
do with... Outside of a couple bear hot dogs.
Nope, we're not eating at the Royals game.
We're not doing hot dogs in Royals?
Well, you can absolutely grab a couple steamies and put them in your cargo short pocket, and you do what you want to do. What you're drinking is Tank 7 by Bolivar. Okay. It is a weird saison that they cannot brew in any other kettle other than Tank 7. For some weird reason, they think it's yeast residue within the kettle.
Why does that sound gross to me?
It shouldn't.
Yeast residue isn't usually something I think about when I want to,
it's a delicious beer and it's high in alcohol. So you only need like 2 to get you through the game. Okay. Let's talk about Kansas City barbecue. I would argue Kansas City barbecue is the best in the country. Yeah. Texas can, you know, this goes back to the Jack White, Eddie Vedder debate. It's both great, but.
Well, Texas is good, but Texas is Riley Green and Kansas City barbecue is Al K-Line.
Bingo. Q39 is where you need to go. It is downtown. Okay. What you want to order is 2 things. You want to get the burn ends. They basically call it Kansas City candy.
Do you get a lot of burnt ends? Do some burnt ends the next time you barbecue. It is delicious.
Delicious. And then they smoke their wings, and their wings are to die for. They do a buttermilk ranch. I don't even like ranch, but buttermilk blue cheese as well. It's with cubes of blue cheese in it. It's fantastic. The most famous place, Q39 is kind of more recent, but it's awesome. Anytime you go there, you'll see Chiefs players, Royals players, University of Kansas athletes, coaches, etc. Oklahoma/KC Joe's. So there was a guy named Oklahoma Joe. He opened up a barbecue stop at a old gas station, ran it, became very, very, very famous, and then eventually switched it under pressure from the city to become Kansas City Joe. So they now have a few different locations. They're big into jam bands and deadheads. That's the kind of music that plays. Again, you can get Boulevard, Wheat, Tank 7 on Draft. What you want to get there is the Z-Man sandwich. It is sliced brisket with a slice of smoked provolone and two onion rings, and then their special barbecue sauce. It's absolutely fantastic. They also dust their fries with their barbecue seasoning. I'm usually not a big fry guy, but theirs are a way to go.
When you do it that way, you become a fry guy.
And then I've got three more for you, and these are kind of the OGs of Kansas City barbecue. They're all very similar. They're all delicious. I would say get brisket, get ribs, and get pulled pork. Divvy it up and try all three at all three of these places. You're not going to be disappointed. One is Gates, one is Bryant's, and one is Slaps. The one thing I want to say is Bryant's might be my favorite for this unique attribute, Chet. When you first walk in and get in the line, they have bags of Wonder Bread just stacked, and you reach in with your naked paw. They don't have gloves, and you pull out your white bread. And then you pass your tray to the men and ladies working behind the counter, and they put your barbecue on yourself.
Isn't that lovely? I've been to KC. I've done the barbecue. I've been to a couple places outside of the city. I've been a couple places in the city. Kansas City for barbecue reminds me a lot of like Chicago for pizza.
Yes.
It's like the competition just elevates the whole entire industry in the area. And you're not going to get bad barbecue in Kansas City. No. I haven't had bad barbecue. I've never left any barbecue spot I've been to. And a couple of them look like just a hole in the wall, but they're the best. And in Chicago, you'll go to a zillion places and have pizza, and they'll all kick the you-know-what everybody else. So I think that you're just going to stumble into a great barbecue regardless if you're in that area.
Yeah, I probably left 8 to 10 places.
And I'm sure there's options at the ballpark. There's got to be.
You can get a Z-Man there. I know that. But I wanted to support these places.
That's great. Good, we're getting outside of the ballpark. We're going outside into the city. We're checking things out. Look at that.
So that is kind of my recap on that. I probably 8 to 10 places that I didn't mention.
Awesome.
Guess what? We're going to be doing the pod for a while. We can explore more. Maybe we'll do a road trip down there and we'll go from there. That being said, we now have an exciting week coming up against Chicago baseball.
We do.
Four games in my hometown, the Windy City, against the Chicago White Sox. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights. Should get a Scooble matchup on Thursday during the day. And then the Chicago Cubs travel to Comerica for a weekend series. We will be back with you on a Thursday pod. It's going to be interesting this week. I'm going to do some live podding from the, Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yes.
At this point, from the Tigers games. And so you're going to get my thoughts, takes, food in real time. Like as I bite into a Bobex delicious Polish sausage, you're going to get like that, sound effect, whether you want it or
not.
That's where we're at. Hey, I just want to give a tip of the cap to you, my co-host. We are now celebrating our 21st episode.
Yes.
And hey,
21 episodes. We cleared 20 somehow.
Yeah, we're beyond Barry Sanders. We're now to Deion Sanders.
The football podcast.
Get to Lawrence Taylor, 56, we'll really have something to say.
Bill, it's been a blast. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and we're going to keep doing it. You guys, thanks for all of our loyal listeners. You guys have been wonderful. Keep the questions coming in the comments section. You want to hear us talk about anything? You want to hear us cover anything about these other teams? Drop something in there. Let us know. we may mention it. Until next time, Bill, looking forward to your live updates from Guaranteed Rate Sell Ballpark Field, whatever the heck they're calling it now. I hope you enjoy yourself.
Will do.
Have a good one, folks.
Talk to you soon. Bye.